you really have to look at the four dimensions of learning. So it's about skills. It's about the knowledge, yes. It's about skills, creativity, critical thinking, communication, collaboration. How do you measure that? That's become a bit trickier. Then it's about character, how we behave and engage in the world. So even more difficult to measure, maybe. Mindfulness, curiosity, courage, resilience, ethics, leadership. I'm by the way, citing the work from the CCR, the Center for Curriculum Redesign, who came up with that sort of four-dimensional approach to curriculum. And then meta-learning, of course, is learn how to learn. And I think that is key to empower the learner so they understand how they learn best and to take that step back and reflect on their own learning. And I think that can be extremely efficient.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome back to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hey there.
And this is part two with Melody Lang. Hi, Melody.
Hi, nice to be here.
Yeah. And if you weren't able to catch part one, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Pandora. But for now, we're going to jump right back into the conversation with Melody.
Are there places that you've seen where this data is actually being deployed in that powerful way?
Mm-hmm. Other places as in?
Well, I think what you're describing is a remarkable opportunity for both learners and teachers. Mm-hmm. What I'm wondering is the level at which faculty are willing to take advantage of that kind of data to actually modify their practices in response to what the learners are doing.
That's right. And what's the learning curve like for the faculty to interpret, to access and interpret the dashboards and then modify their facilitation?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's my ideal world, but it's true that in practice, it's true. I do agree. It's extremely difficult for faculty to adopt new digital tools because they're set in their ways and they're happy with the way they're doing things. So I have to say, it's quite tricky, actually. So I would say in Europe, because that's where we were operating, the forward-thinking countries were the Nordics and the Netherlands. Hmm. They were really hungry. I mean, they wanted more of that. Yes, I think it's not obvious. And that's why, actually, that's coming back to Newton. One of the challenges that we faced at Newton is that it's B2B with publishers. So, of course, then publishers were, Pearson included, super happy to power their products with Newton's technology. Mm-hmm. But then it was up to them to sell that to schools or universities. And that's where it got trickier because I think teachers were not ready for this.
The other thing that struck me as you were describing that, and I hadn't thought about this before, is that as the learner's engaging with this adaptive learning technology, behind the curtain, you're still collecting data on those interactions, which then leads to tweaking the connections to make it more efficient. Is that correct?
Correct. Exactly. If you and me go online to follow the same course, we're going to see different content in real time because they're going to understand where you need remediation, where I need remediation. And so we might finish the whole course in a very different time frame as a result. Very often it can be criticized because you're like, wait, but are you only measuring knowledge? And it's not only about knowledge. And, you know, and that's where it's true. You really have to look at the four dimensions of learning. So it's about skills. It's about the knowledge, yes. It's about skills, creativity, critical thinking, communication, collaboration. How do you measure that? That's become a bit trickier. Then it's about character, how we behave and engage in the world. So even more difficult to measure, maybe. Mindfulness, curiosity, courage, resilience, ethics, leadership. I'm by the way, citing the work from the CCR, the Center for Curriculum Redesign, who came up with that sort of four-dimensional approach to curriculum. And then meta-learning, of course, is learn how to learn. And I think that is key to empower the learner so they understand how they learn best and to take that step back and reflect on their own learning. And I think that can be extremely efficient.
So is part of the data collection include not only the level at which people move from point A to point B to point C, but the speed with which they make those transitions? Is that part of the data formula?
Absolutely. Yes, okay. yes, absolutely.
So if something takes longer, it could be indicative of some kind of frustration or lack of motivation or whatever that might be.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you're mentioning that because it's true. To what type of data can you collect? And it starts from binary data. Did you get this answer right or wrong? And that's assessment data. So that means you always need to put in these little questions inside to understand. But then it goes all the way to observable data, as you say, well, how long, and then the mouse movement, what did they do to try to get in their head and understand, you know, how they interacted with the content and everything. And then all the way to, and that's a bit of a peek in the future, but I think we're there actually, it's with the video, the webcam, understanding the facial expression of the learner. And it's like, he's bored, he or she is bored, frustrated, angry, sad, you know? And I think we will start tracking everything.
You're right. And it's not even an adaptive learning tool, but we've recently been in conversations with Zoom for Class or Class for Zoom, where they have features that will track students' eyes. How often are students looking away from the cam or looking down or looking up? And you're right, we're there, ready or not.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if Tiffany told you this before you came on today, but we actually have millions of listeners. We're just about to go over to the billion mark. So as you look ahead into the future,
yes,
what kinds of exciting things do you see ahead for all of us in terms of the application of technology to teaching and learning?
Gosh, I would, if I really go that far in the future, I would imagine immersive learning experiences. Mm-hmm. I would imagine virtual reality or augmented reality, depending. But actually, that's already existing. I don't know.
Although I will tell you, our colleague Mike Jones is jumping up and down right now, singing and laughing because you said that. So thank you for that.
No, because I think, you know, do you know what the metaverse is? The metaverse would be a whole virtual world, but in parallel of our real world, right? And imagine you could just enter with your obviously VR set into this metaverse, but really experience learning, basically experience things in a way that is not imaginable. So that would be far in the future. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think it's one of those things where you've said that immersive learning exists, but just like you were ahead of the game on adaptive learning, immersive learning may exist, but that does not mean that it's infiltrated and has been adopted and used well at the university level, because it has not. At least from what we've seen, there's a long way for it to go. So you're always on the cutting edge, but the reality is it needs to trickle down and really happen for students.
Yes, it was, as you know, I've been also, and I am an investor in the space, and it was also fun to see those new things popping up. And it just reminds me of this one about training to be a surgeon, and you would wear this VR mask and have haptic feedback gloves.
Kind of, absolutely.
And you would actually, you know, train to do the knee surgery operation and things like that. And where I was curious, it was to understand, talking to surgeons, well, yes, there's the technicality of understanding what you need to do, but there's also, shoot, something went wrong. How do you react under stress? Yeah. And it's putting them in those real life situations that is really, I think, helping with the learning. to be closer to a real life situation. Yeah,
you're right.
But Tiffany, I don't know about you, but I'm going to be thinking well into the future now, every day.
Oh, I know.
I wonder what Melanie's thinking about today.
Well, I've got another one for you, Brad. I've actually been keeping a secret from all of you, and that is a secret regarding Mind Stone. So we haven't even talked yet about Melody's primary focus. Believe it or not, it's not yachts. It's not adaptive learning. It is, at the moment, it's not even investing. It is Mind Stone, and the tool is awesome and currently free. So I'd like to turn it over to you, Melody, to talk about that.
And you mean her primary interest today, not like tomorrow or the next day. Go ahead.
And I'm telling her what it is. I might not even be right.
And I love that because everything is interconnected, because that's going to also maybe answer your question, Brad, because what about today? Well, today I'm a mother of two children in a traditional educational system. So I feel frustrated on a daily basis on the content that is being taught, totally obsolete and subjective, excuse me. And secondly, how it's being taught. Mm. So it's a suffering. So I think I've developed my whole sort of theory of change with regards to education, but I think everything is you know, connecting with one another. So Mind Stone, how did we come about Mind Stone? The idea is to say, well, how about we put the learner in the driving seat? Right? Mm. There's so much content out there already. If I wanted to reskill or upskill myself because I want to progress my career or find a new job, I'm looking for a job, I wouldn't even know where to start. It's super chaotic out there. So Mindstone wants to be that guide helping you navigate this vast amount of resources in the most efficient way. But put everything in the equation. Imagine informal and formal learning, as in you go to work, you listen to a podcast. Isn't that part of your learning journey? Yeah, you are learning from that podcast. You go back home at night, you're on a, you know, online class, some MOOC you're just following every night. Again, part of your learning journey. So how can we take all of these elements and all of this content you're consuming on a daily basis as part of your learning journey? So Mindstone would track all of these pieces and would really keep a track record, like build some type of holistic learner profile to understand where you're at. And then use, you know, if you're familiar with the science of learning, so there are quite a few things that have been proven to accelerate the learning, make it more efficient. So I'm going to give you examples. So feedback. If I receive feedback, that's tremendously helping in my learning experience. Then there is interleaving practice and spaced repetition. So this is to make sure I can memorize the key points, but not just for the test. I want to store that in my long-term memory. So, and another one is obviously learn how to learn, as I said, having the right tools to understand how I learn best, and that's metacognition and meta-learning. So all these principles of science of learning, we want to include that in Mindstone, in our product. So that on Mindstone, you will have these pieces of resources you're going through on a daily basis, whether it's audio, video, text, you would be able to interact with them in such a way that you learn from them. So whether highlighting, commenting, but also discussing it with your peers, with your team members. We want to put social learning at the core of our product because that is also extremely efficient for your learning. And also to help you develop critical thinking skills if someone's not, you know, doesn't agree with you or you don't agree with the content you're reading and going through. And that's it. And then move it into sort of custom learning pathways. You could look at if you wanted to learn about a specific topic or subject. And then lastly, because obviously it's going to be built in several stages and it's not going to be built overnight, as you can imagine, it would be to go towards the full personalized learning experience. So that would be just for you. You at that time of the day prefer to listen to something rather than read something. I mean, it's going to be fully personalized around your lifestyle, but also your preferences in learning and so on. And what you do. So sorry, the most important thing I have to say, because Mindstone, we call the platform for compound learning. So if you're familiar with the concept of compounding, this is exactly that, is that you start with already some amount of knowledge and skills, and it's all about building from that and just adding up. So this is why we liked the idea of using that term for what we were doing.
Two thoughts. The first is, I don't know if it's been mentioned or not, but this can be a browser extension, right, Melody? This Mindstone is a browser extension. It's a website. It's free and accessible for all students and faculty to use and to share amongst each other. And then second, we've had some guests on the podcast talk about digital content curation, digital literacy, and all of those terms are popping up as you're talking about how great of a tool Mindstone would be to cultivate some other hot topics in higher ed and new ways of learning.
Absolutely. And what I need to tell you as well is that when building this first stage of Mindstone, we were thinking, okay, well, for stage one, maybe let's look at executives, thought leaders, those who already use Evernote and Pocket and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit and lockdown. And we're like, wait a second, I think some are going to be suffering from that. And we turned to higher education students. And we, carried out surveys, interviews, and we realized they were totally lost. They didn't have the tools to be fully online, to be doing collaborative work or projects fully online. And I mean, you have no idea the answers we had from our, user interview questions. It's like, okay, one would maybe copy-paste a web article into a Google Doc. Okay, you can imagine the mess with the formatting there. But others would take a picture with their phone of some web article and then send it on the WhatsApp of their, peers for their group work. Like, okay, that's a bit clunky. We're going to offer a better solution for that. And so Mindstone definitely was a lifesaver for the students who needed to do collaborative work projects. And they could very seamlessly and easily collaborate and work on not only on PDF documents, but also on any web pages and write their own notes collaboratively. So that was extremely helpful.
Sometimes I get giddy in these podcasts with things I've experienced firsthand, and I just can't stop. And this is one of those situations where I must tell everyone, the thing that got me excited was that you can copy and paste any article or web page online, any of them, into Mindstone. Just copy and paste it or put the URL, and it takes away all the ads and all the noise. Melody showed me with I think it was a Forbes article, and there was so much clutter. And then at the click of a button, it disappeared and I could annotate it.
Wow.
It made me so happy. Yeah. So I just had to add that last product endorsement, I guess. Before we continue. As CEO of an investment company, you learn about edtech startups before anyone else. What are the types of companies or technologies that you believe have the most potential for the higher ed space in the coming years?
Okay, so we've talked already a fair bit about technology, looking in the future, what could work and, be helping with the learning process. What I would, now I'm going to put my investor hat on maybe, but still with the edtech angle, I don't know. That would be for you to judge. But I would, of course, tell you, well, there's like Mindstone. And the reason why I'm saying this is because at Mindstone, we've positioned our product as being learner-centric. So we want to make sure that everything is optimized for the learner, which is not always the case when you look at other solutions that need to fit into an existing system. They need to integrate in an LMS, in some, and whether not only at higher ed institutions, but look at learning and development departments at corporates. It's always about integrating, so it's useful, and because it helps head of people, HR, and they're gathering the data. But is that really a nice user experience for the person at the receiver end of the product, which is, the learner? So I would say that learner centricity would be key in whatever edtech company I'm looking at, I think. And what else? I would say, oh yes, that's a big one. So, no, because that's how I've totally wrote, that's how I defined and wrote my investment thesis for MPA education. And that's, and that's exactly how we're building Mindstone as well, is not to fall in those traps. Mm-hmm. So it's terrible. But if you want to have the largest impact on the world and you want therefore to scale significantly, well, sadly, or I don't know, it's there's no, well, you will have to be content agnostic. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to have too many challenges around local context, languages, national curricula, and that's where it becomes really, really tricky. So I would say learner centricity, yes, and being content agnostic, mm-hmm. that would be the two key points I would be after to invest in an edtech company, if that's mm-hmm. the angle we're looking at right now. Mm-hmm. And then, sadly to say, is that K-12 and higher ed, if you're selling to institutions, it's super tricky. I mean, long sales cycle and mm-hmm. things like that. So actually, there was an interesting article the other day I came across, because like, okay, great. So the edtech industry has totally taken off thanks to COVID, which is a weird sentence to say. But, you know, with COVID, it's an industry that totally took off in terms of investment, new solutions, and everybody has been forced to move digital. Amazing. Finally, the changes we're waiting for so long. And then in an article, it's like, okay, that's great, guys. What about after COVID, like post COVID? Is that going to last? Is that, and of course it's going to last, in the sense that, yes, we're going to have really shifted our, you know, mindset. Yes. But back onto the more practical side of things, selling to institutions will still be as tricky as ever. So the article was saying those edtech solutions that will be better off are those who have got a B2C model. Mm-hmm. And so focusing on the learners. So yeah, that's what I had to,
to say. Only one word comes to mind when I think of Melody as a podcast guest: delightful. You were wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Melody, it has been such a thrill to have you with us today. You've planted so many seeds for us to think about. And of course, we'll have some of your resources included on our Digital Throne webpage mm-hmm. for those who are listening, the millions/billions that are listening. So thanks again for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure to be here today.
Thank you, Melody. And thanks, Brad. And behind the scenes, as always, we have Mike Jones. He's our mixed media producer, and Brady Boswell, taking notes and helping with the tech. And they've been geeking out with us, especially during this episode series. And so we just want to comment on that we're going to be taking what we're learning and putting it into practice too. For all of our listeners, please catch the extra content on digitaltolearn.com. Like our podcast on your favorite podcast provider, download the episodes, and stay tuned for more. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.